I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the AJ Steele Show. As you might be able to tell from my voice, I've been a bit under the weather for the last couple of days, and I have a temperature of about 102 right now. I'm not sure if it's COVID or just a common cold, or maybe I'm just becoming a hypochondriac. Who knows? Anyway, I was thinking a lot about today's episode because it's a milestone show in many ways. It's an interview with a very special San Francisco investigative reporter named Susan Dyer Reynolds, who for a quick 30 minutes reminded me what a real reporter is supposed to be like. Unlike all of those phony, overly educated, cookie-cutter government mouthpieces masquerading as men and women of the news. I'm sure that most of you already know that news cycles these days come and go at breakneck speed. What was news yesterday is already old news today, and today's news is stale the minute it hits the stands. A few days ago, we were talking about San Francisco's uber-progressive DA, Chesa Boudin's recall, and today we're already enthralled by the sham January 6th hearings, orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi and Liz Cheney. I've been saying for many years that the Democrats and the Republicans are the flip side of the same globalist coin. And if the fact that these two hags are heaping untold praise on each other doesn't prove my point, I don't know what does. But going back to our interview, in many ways, what happened in San Francisco is no less than a political earthquake. And yes, living in California, I don't use the word earthquake too lightly. My beautiful San Francisco is dying. I still remember seeing it for the first time as a 13-year-old immigrant. A beautiful city like no other, clean and full of life. Chinatown, downtown, Golden Gate Park, and the hate with all of its cool clubs and colorful people. And not to mention the fact that the first burger I ever had in America was a Zim burger at Zim's, which is long gone. Well, the San Francisco I'm describing is long gone as well. Yes, the city is still very beautiful, but it's dangerous, it's filthy, it's judgmental, and yes, it's uninviting. Business vacancies are at historic highs. Corporate conventions, which are big moneymakers for the city's hotels and merchants, are down by 90%. Nobody wants to come here and get mugged or shot or step in human excrement. And I don't blame them. As a matter of fact, many San Franciscans are moving away or thinking about moving. Look, if you've listened to me before or know me, you know that I'm not going to sugarcoat anything and I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm not here to please the PC crowd. So here's the truth. San Francisco has been ground zero for insane progressivism way before Seattle jumped on board, way before New York, way before Portland and Austin. And yet the people who live here have had it. They've had enough. They've had enough of rampant crime, enough of car break-ins, enough of homeless bums defecating and urinating and shooting up on every street corner. They've had enough of violent black gangs from Hunters Point and Oakland and Richmond shoplifting and robbing stores at will, not to mention beating up innocent Asians. But most of all, San Franciscans who happen to pay one of the nation's top tax rates have had it with gun violence. Gun violence like the wanton murder of Kate Steinle. She was out walking with her dad when an illegal alien shot her dead for no reason. people have simply had it with this DA who did his utmost to vilify the SFPD while not prosecuting most of the criminals and felons who turned this beautiful city into a stinky, drug-infested version of the Wild West, minus the cowboy hats and dancing girls. A lot of good folks don't dare to tell it like it is. A lot of good people are too scared to offend the easily offended, the usual suspects. But the truth is always the truth. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. I don't care if you like me. I don't care if you like to hear the truth. But I'm going to tell it to you exactly how it is. Black crime is out of control in San Francisco. Homeless crime, which includes people of all races, is also out of control. But everything about this mayhem can be blamed on one group and one group alone. Rich white progressives who live in beautiful neighborhoods protected by private security guards. Rich white people who want to play God and pretend that they care about minorities and equity. Rich white people who have consistently voted in these insane progressive district attorneys and mayors and supervisors. And why should they care? They're safe in their ivory towers. They get to virtue signal all day long while regular people who can't afford gates and security guards get screwed. Everyday Asian merchants, white store owners, Hispanic small businesses, and yes, even blacks who work hard and try to raise a family and are sick and tired of crime and violence and would like nothing better than for the police to arrest all the thugs and all the criminals in their community. They're the victims here. And all of this leads us to our interview with Susan Dyer Reynolds. San Francisco has hundreds of publications, and all of them came out in lockstep, or I should say goose step, against the recall of Chase Abudin. All of them except for one, the Marina Times. And the editor and the investigative reporter extraordinaire of the Marina Times is Susan Dyer Reynolds. She is the only honest reporter in town who exposed the crime rates. She is the only reporter in town who dared speak out against the killings of Kate Steinle and many other innocents. She is the only reporter in this major city who dared hold the insane progressives' feet to the fire. And for daring to do that, she was attacked by many major publications and news organizations all over California. She was threatened. She was vilified. Some of Boudin's henchmen, they tried to dox her, and instead they ended up doxing another woman with a similar name. But Susan never wavered. She didn't quit. She kept going, and in many ways her work was instrumental in the recall of Chase Abudin, the darling of the San Francisco left who just got handed his walking papers. A bit earlier I told you about the fast news cycles, and yes, the progressive media was very quick to pivot away from Chase Abudin's recall and from the huge ramifications that this whole incredible vote has had on other progressive district attorneys all over the country. As a matter of fact, most of these corrupt liberal media members who supported him didn't learn a single lesson from this recall. In their faulty analysis, it was his horrible personality that did him in. That's what they claimed. They said it's the fact that he was rude to the media. They said that it was the fact that he and Mayor London Breed, who's another incompetent genius, she and him didn't get along. And some of these brainless media folks, newspaper writers, radio talk show hosts, TV personalities, they all pontificated that he lost the recall because over 30 of the prosecutors who worked for him quit due to his poor people skills. No, they didn't quit because of his poor people skills. They quit because he wasn't doing his job. So that's your media for you. That's the California media. That's the American media for you. Excuses after excuses and zero honest analysis. It's almost like they do everything they can to protect their overlords and the hierarchy that controls most of our cities. It's almost like they do everything they can to protect those who won't protect us. Well, not one of them understood the truth because they didn't want to understand it. Chase Abudin was recalled because he didn't protect the citizens he was entrusted to protect. He was recalled because his kind of pathological America-hating progressivism always fails in the end. He was recalled because he was a lousy DA, period, end of story. Ladies and gentlemen, I better calm down because my temperature is actually rising as I speak. And I already started at 102, so there's not much room here. Before we get on with our wonderful interview, I would like to once again thank you for your listenership. I don't ever ask you for money, and I never will. And I never ask you for much except for that you subscribe to our podcast, which is free, and spread the word about the AJ Steel Show to all of your friends. Just last week, YouTube banned one of our top-rated shows. An interview we had with a Harvard Medical School professor and a world-renowned psychiatrist, Dr. Sheldon Roth, who spoke very eloquently about the transgender LGBTQ indoctrination of our kids and the side effects, the long-term effects, I should say, of COVID lockdowns on our children's mental health. You can still hear it on our podcast on iTunes and Google Podcasts and Spotify and all the other major providers. And I really hope you give it a listen because some of the things he said were absolutely earth-shattering. Either way, I hope you realize that this show is and has been a complete labor of love for me, and I will keep doing it for as long as I can. And most of all, I want you to know that I am truly humbled by your continued support. This is AJ Steele, and we will be right back.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is.
Susan, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a great pleasure for us. And before we start our interview, I wanted to congratulate you and all the sane people of San Francisco who spoke out with a loud voice last night and voted to overwhelmingly recall the darling of all the progressives here in California, our arrogant former district attorney, Chesa Boudin. Do you feel vindicated or what?
You know, I do in some ways. I mean, and it's not a personal issue for me. I mean, everybody wanted to make a big deal about his, family, and no doubt that shaped who he is today. There's just no way around that. But for me, it was more stories of the victims. I was the only one who told the stories of the victims and the cases that this horrific cases. And it showed not only how he didn't care about victims, but also how hard he tried to get really bad people out of responsibility for what they did.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. Now, you have a newspaper. It's called the Marina Times.
I no longer own it, though.
Okay, but you're still an editor. You still write for it, correct?
I do still write for it. I sold it to the Street Media, which owns LA Weekly and The Village Voice and a bunch of others. In fact, I'm writing a piece today. They want me to write a piece on Boudin today that will run in all of their publications. So I'll be able to say I have a byline in The Village Voice. but yeah, I still write the Reynolds Wrap Opinion column. It's in the Marina Times where I broke all the City Hall corruption stories. And it was in the Marina Times that I was the only media to endorse Yes on H for the recall of Chesa Boudin.
So I was going to say, and you said it for me, the Marina Times was the only publication in San Francisco which fully supported the recall of this creep. And I know that you took a lot of heat from all the big California newspapers, especially the ones here in the Bay Area, right? And
yep.
As far as I know, they always march lockstep with the progressive lunatics, and they're hell-bent to destroy or to turn our beautiful city into a third world crap hole. What is it like to be one of the few independents, the few non-governmental mouthpiece newspapers right here in the belly of the progressive beast?
It's very, it's hard because one thing about me is that I go, you know, like when I did the corruption stories, that was a moderate, you know, electorate. Those were, you know, Willie Brown people, Lennon Breed people. And then on the other end, I go after people like Chesa Boudin and Crazy Dean Preston. And the hardest thing for them, I think, is that they can't pigeonhole me. The fact that I will talk about the fact that, you know, Shahid Buttar was the victim of a racist smear campaign on an immigrant man, a brown Muslim man, and then turn around and also say that Greg Sir should step down because of all the young men of color being shot in the back, and then turn around and say Hillary Ronan and Dean Preston have no business being supervisors and Chesa Boudin has to go. So I'm very much someone who just, and I, you know, I have followers that get mad at me. They'll say, you're a hack when I write about, you know, if they're moderate and I write about moderates, and then the ones that are, I don't call them progressive, I call them left wing. They'll say, you know, you're the clown when I support something like the recall of Chesa Boudin. So I think for me, I just do me, and it is hard just because they get very personal. They attack, very personal attacks. They try to dox me, and they ended up doxing the wrong Susan Reynolds. They doxed a poor lady who is like 20 years older than me and is a realtor, and they listed her workplace and her phone number. So they're pretty crazy. So, and I'm sure you have the same issue with these type of people, is that, you know, you kind of have to watch your back because they are pretty nuts.
Well, luckily I have a lot of weapons, but you're right. Yeah. I have been doxxed. I've been sued. I've been attacked. There's no question about it. I don't mind if you do a little victory lap for us because you deserve it. Can you tell us a little bit about all the abuse that you actually had to endure for daring to challenge this California machine? I mean, if you think about it, they're all completely out of touch. All these papers, all the media, they all supported Chesa Boudin, and yet he lost by a huge landslide, right?
Yeah, and they're not going to change. That's the sad thing about it. The Chronicle is a full-on propaganda machine at this point. It's arguable that Heather Knight is, you know, the only sane one, but she's only partially sane because she's all over the place. They literally had their, quote, data specialist, Susie Nielsen, manipulating data that was hand-fed to her by Boudin. That's not what a daily paper should be doing, which left it on me to take that data and say, okay, you say that crime is down, but guess what? You left gun felonies out of your statistics. What data reporter leaves gun felonies out, right? So I had to write the piece where, and I was, you know, months and months of work with, because Matt's not my strong suit. So, but, you know, I had to write this piece working with data scientists and numbers people and cops and lawyers. And we came up with the absolute irrefutable fact that he dismisses 76% of gun felonies and that those people have gone on again to commit murder. And as you know, I mean, only 1% of shooting deaths are mass shootings. The rest are almost all gang related. And if you don't get these guys off the street, you can take every gun and flush them down the toilet, as Chesa Boudin, soothe the ghost guns, you know, and those guys like Zion Young, who had, 11 gun felonies he was arrested on, Chesa Boudin said, poor kid, he was a pretextual stop, meaning he got the cops locked up for them doing something else and found guns that actually wasn't. They were called to the scene on Zion Young. But you know, then they let him go. He lets him go. And 2 months later, he has another gun and he tries to rob and shoots and kills Calvin Chu. So the gun didn't shoot Calvin Chu. Zion Young did. And if Zion Young was in jail, like he should have been, getting help, which is the other part that he never talks about, because now this 21-year-old guy, especially with Chesa being gone, most likely will serve life in prison. So his life's ruined too, and his family, you know. So the two sides of Chesa Boudin is that he doesn't just hurt the families, but he hurts the people that are committing crimes. Not that I feel sorry for Zion Young, but the fact is that Chesa says that these are the guys he cares about, and yet here's a guy who might have served 4 or 5 years on gun felonies who's now going to serve life in prison.
Well, I feel that Chesa has a pathological hatred of everything that's normal, in my opinion. There's a lot of deeper pathology to this guy than we realize. Now, he was a horrible, right? Now, Hero is a horrible DA, and we're going to talk some more about his policies and what his policies did to San Francisco, which in some ways has become the canary in a coal mine for the rest of America. Every liberal city in this country with these George Soros-supported DAs has turned into a nightmare. But very few people outside of California know that before Boudin, we had George Gascon as our DA. And before him, we had none other than a genius vice president of ours, Kamala Harris. I do know that last night's recall was a huge deal because the dominoes could start falling. But
I agree.
But, and this is a serious question for you, what makes you think that San Francisco will get a new DA who actually follows the law and actually works to protect citizens and taxpayers?
Well, you know, as much as my feelings on London Breed are mixed, she's like the best hope we have as far as someone who is moderate. Just the fact she appointed Matt Dorsey, who I've worked with as part of the press for 20 years, over Honey Mahogany, who has the same platform as Matt Haney ever had, and worked for Matt Haney. It gives me hope that she will appoint somebody. Most likely, I'm going to say Catherine Stephanie. And I do know her, obviously, because she's she writes column for the Marina Times, and she is our supervisor. She is a former prosecutor, very, very tough. And I think, you know, she, as you know, she's been instrumental in, you know, she was one of the few people, she and Matt were the only ones that came out in favor of the recall. I have faith that at least in the interim, it will be somebody who gets the office back on track, but that's not going to happen overnight. It's a lot of work, and I don't feel like I can give up, because the fact is he may run again in November. Mm-hmm. The stories have to keep coming to keep reminding people of the damage that he's done.
You're listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show. We tell it like it is. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a
girl. All I really want to be. You know better than most that San Francisco is a complete mess. Once a year, my wife takes the kids to Fisherman's Wharf, which is probably the biggest tourist attraction in the city. And there were always a few weirdos and drug addicts lurking around there, even in the 80s. I remember those. Yes. But last month, she was there with the kids, and she told me that the side streets had a bunch of homeless tents out there, and it was complete with a smell of urine and weed and excrement on the sidewalks. Disgusting. Now, this isn't Skid Row in LA or the Tenderloin. This was in the touristy part of San Francisco, the Fisherman's Wharf. And you know what she told me? She's never going back. So what are your thoughts on the homeless situation? I know you wrote a lot about it. Why can't San Francisco control it?
Well, so far, San Francisco can't control it because they don't want to. The board is controlled 100%, if you really truthfully, is 100% controlled by socialists. I mean, the furthest to the left you can get is piled up so that Glennon Breed, you know, doesn't stand a chance against. She's only gotten really, you know, Matt Dorsey and Stephanie on her side. Before that, she only had Stephanie. I think Mandelman is, you know, somewhat, I agree with him that, you know, you get everybody off the street, and if they won't accept shelter, they have to go. And until we have a board that supports that, as you may have read a few years back, I went to Austin, Texas, and visited the Community First Village. I, for years, have been writing about that, and now they're finally going to start doing it. But will they do it right? Probably not. Sad truth.
It is. And there's a second part to it that I think you've written about as well. And I'll tell you a personal story. So the other day I was talking with a family member. I live in Marin County, which is a very liberal, extremely liberal place. And a family member of mine who's a hippie, he's of the hippie persuasion. and we got talking about the homeless. And of course he told me drugs are not a problem. And that the only reason that so many people are homeless is because of inequality and inequity and capitalism and all the housing costs. And I tried to explain to him that homelessness is big business, much like illegal immigration. And I told him all about all these so-called nonprofit agencies who end up making quite a large profit from these homeless clients. Could you elaborate on that for our listeners who don't realize that a lot of churches and synagogues and other do-gooder tax-exempt organizations actually benefit financially from continuing this homeless crisis?
Well, I can sum that up in one example, and that's HealthRight 360. They are a huge – they're not just in San Francisco, but they're a huge, quote, nonprofit that collects millions and millions of tax dollars in San Francisco. To run the Linkage Center, for example, which is the controversial Linkage Center where they're supposed to be connecting people to services, but in reality, they're just letting them do drugs in private. They collect millions of dollars for, quote, harm reduction. They pay five of their executives over $3,000 a year.
$300,000 a year? Hey, you and I are in the wrong business.
And this is taxpayer money. You know, they get some donations, but it's mostly taxpayer money. There are about 250 nonprofits in San Francisco that tend to, you know, with the that deal with the homeless, and they make, over $280,250,000 just between those little agencies. Not all little, some big. Not all of them are getting millions, but the fact is they're all getting enough that they're paying executives six figures. And if homelessness were to get solved tomorrow, they have no jobs. Simple as that. I mean, it's really, when you think about it, and, you know, everybody knows I'm an animal advocate, and particularly pit bulls. I have a rescue pit bull. I've always had them. And people could say the same about, you know, I've heard people say the same about the animal shelter thing, right? Like, well, they wouldn't have a job. But that's not at all true, because there'll always be a need for animal rescue. People that get into animal rescue are different than people that get into human rescue, because people in animal rescue actually want the animal to get better and do better. People are in the harm reduction business for humans. They don't do anything to help them. I mean, you only need to walk down the Tenderloin to see whatever they're getting paid to do, they're not doing. And, you know, let's face it, if Tim Cook was doing to Apple what they're doing to harm reduction, he would be out of a job.
Well, that's an interesting analogy. Look what the owners of Twitter are doing to Twitter right now. So I don't know if you're they're kind of doing the same thing.
100% agree. I can't get my damn blue check mark because they don't want it. Not that it's a big deal, but the fact, I mean, you know, in the old days, Twitter gave check marks to, you know, anybody that breathed. They were throwing them out like candies. There's people out there that have like 150 followers, blue check mark. But the truth is that they definitely have a bias, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Well, the beautiful thing is that in some ways, by you and I talking and other people like us and the stuff that you write for the Marina Times, we're bypassing them. It's on a small local level, but everything starts locally. Now, since we're on a roll here, I'm going to take you in a different direction, but it's related. We talked about drug addicts and mentally ill homeless people. Why not add illegal aliens to the mix? I'm sure that you heard about that lowlife guy, the murderer of Kate Steinle.
Yeah.
This beautiful girl who was killed for no reason other than the fact that she was out there on a walk with her dad on Pier 14 in Fisherman's Wharf. And I'm sure you heard that he was just released. He was first acquitted here in San Francisco by a San Francisco jury.
Right.
And now a California judge sentenced him to time served. So he's actually free. Is there any way justice can be served by these lefty juries in California?
Well, in Zarate's case, he's now being returned to Texas because they have a warrant for him. So in the case of Zarate, he'll be taken care of by Texas. That's the answer. You know, you don't mess with Texas. And and so he will definitely serve time, and then he will be deported. And even the judge in this case said, don't come back. I mean, you know, that I think that there's a point where even judges are, you know, as much as we have some crazy liberal judges, there's just no way around the fact that this guy really can't come back here. And the judge did say that in the transcript, said they would throw the book at him if he did come back. But he'll be in Texas for a while. The thing that I objected to was, oh, it must have just been horrible for you there in prison and in jail. And I'm just thinking, well, he was alive, miserable but alive. Kate Steinle is dead. I mean, I was the only person in the media that wrote about that. And the fact that, let's not forget that this poor woman just literally was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And you know, you can call it an accident all day long, but if he hadn't have been in the country and he hadn't have been on that pier and he hadn't found that gun, then she'd be alive. He also told multiple stories, right? Oh, he was, you know, shooting at seals. Well, that's right. Also illegal. So, I mean, you know, the only way to deal with this sort of situation is that, and this is one of my big issues with Chase Aboudin as well. You know, I just wrote the story about the Honduran fentanyl dealers who he calls them victims. They're all trafficked here. There's zero evidence of that. I've studied it extensively. They are not trafficked. If there are, he should be prosecuting their traffickers. And guess what? He hasn't prosecuted a single trafficker. So they don't exist. And even if they do, these guys are there willingly. And the last article that I did showed that the feds picked this whole family up. They were in the process of building a mansion in Honduras, and they have the tap calls. And in the calls, they were making thousands and thousands of dollars a day. And they knew the very big, like, oh, you can get $60 for the blue fentanyl. And they knew exactly what they were doing. And I guarantee that family, because they were big deal sellers, you know that people died because of them. And here they are building a mansion in Honduras. It just can't happen. Sanctuary City was never meant to protect felons and drug dealers. And to say that you need to consider their immigration status, the law says you need to consider it. It doesn't mean you have to say, oh, well, you're an illegal immigrant, so go back to the street and sell more fentanyl. No. If the, you know, the feds can pick someone up, now they're all going to jail and they're all going to be deported. If they can do it, we need a DA who's willing to do that too. Send a message. Sorry, you have to.
I absolutely agree with you. As far as Zarate, wasn't he in California a third time? Because he's been deported a few times. So the way things are going, I think...
Five.
How many?
Five.
Okay, so, wow. So the way things are going, he might be back very soon shooting at SEALs again.
Yes.
A lot of Chesa Boudin and people like him, I call them progressives. You call them lefties, I think, or left-wingers. Was that the term used?
I call them extremists.
Extremists. I like that. I think they want to burn everything down. They don't believe in the law. They have, like I said earlier, they have a deep pathological hatred for everything that's normal. And look, you can be a liberal. You can be a left-winger without hating your country. I started out as a liberal, and now I'm an extreme conservative. Who knows what's going to happen in 5 years? But the point is this, you can still respect the laws and you can still respect the country and you can still have a deep love for a system that gave us this beautiful life that we all have, or most of us do.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
You know, we can talk for hours about all the shoplifting and drug dealings and all the home invasions and car break-ins in San Francisco. And I think that recalling Chesa Boudin is a good start. But do you think that people have really had it with this insanity? What are you hearing from merchants and residents?
That they've had it. I mean, and you know, and they have had it. And also a big factor in this recall was the Asian community. They are tired of being, you know, abused, beaten, robbed. And they've always been known for, you know, quote, staying quiet. And now they're not staying quiet anymore. And that's a huge factor in this. And I think the one thing I do worry is that people think, okay, well, now everything's fine. There's still going to be crime. And I never said there wasn't. I love when people say, like today, Broke-Ass Stewart. Wonderful Broke-Ass Stewart, so credible. He said, oh, yeah, as of today, there'll be no more crime in San Francisco. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever said that. Only idiots said that. There's a long road ahead. But I think that people have had it. And I think this sends a pretty clear signal, as did the school board recall. Mm. You know, and in Santa Clara County, where I live half the time, in Los Gatos, the you know, they soundly rejected Sajid Khan, who was another, you know, Boudin wannabe DA, 3-year public defender, who he actually defended Brock Turner, the rapist at Stanford. Said that he was just shocked at the lack of empathy for that young swimmer at Stanford whose life was ruined. He never mentioned the name of the victim. He didn't even come close. So that's a good sign. I mean, you know, of course, Silicon Valley is a little different than here. But since, you know, there are people from Silicon Valley now that have a stake in San Francisco, like Jason Calacanis, like David Sachs, like Gary Tan. And they're people that, you know, they have the means and the platform. And that's a good thing. And the Asian community now, people keep in mind that, that reporters like me and Stanley Roberts need to still be out there. And that's why Stanley and I are starting our own media company, because we need to tell these stories and no one else will.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Stanley Roberts is back in the Bay Area. I used to watch him in the old days on, what was it, on Cron.
He's the best.
He's excellent. And, you know, you touched on something very interesting that I was going to ask you about. Last night I heard Chesa whining about losing, and he blamed all the conservative billionaires. But I, yeah, right. Yeah. So many conservatives in San Francisco. But I actually feel that, just like you, that it's the Asian community that turned the tide against him. Because they had it, and I'm going to say it. You don't have to say it, and you can't say it, but I'll say it. They've had it with all the black on Asian crime, and they've had it with all the anti-business rhetoric from City Hall. But let's ask about white people, who are, I think, a minority now in San Francisco, but they're the liberals. Do you think they changed their minds, or are they the people that voted against the recall?
Well, a certain segment, you know, most of, if you look at Chesavudin's pictures of his parties and things like that, you see primarily young white social justice warriors and people with white savior complex and a bunch of old white hippies. So, you know, it's like kind of the gray hair and the goatee crowd. Like, there's really no in between. Very few people of color, you know, one out of maybe 50, and he probably pays them to be there like he does the Asian people he hired just to make himself look like he likes Asian people. But I think that he, you know, for the most part, it's that's who supports him. The people that are my followers on Twitter that are white are just as fed up. Hmm. They have kids in the city, and they want to raise their kids in the city. One of my friends is a, you know, third generation San Franciscan. His child is the fourth. And, you know, he wants to stay here, you know, and he doesn't want the city to continue down this path. And, you know, I started sounding the alarm in the Marina Times probably a decade ago. And I would get letters from, you know, the fancy white people in the Marina saying, why are you writing about these homeless and drug people and the hate? And I was like, well, because I live in the hate, and I'm telling you, it's not going to stay contained there forever. Right.
True.
So sure enough, you know, they would write me and say, we don't see it. Well, now they're the same ones that are following me on Twitter and say, oh my God, there was a shooting right in Alpharet. So things have changed.
Well, you've done some marvelous work with all your articles, and you're definitely definitely appreciated in the community.
Thank you.
It sounds to me like what you're telling me is also that other minorities, not just the Asians, but let's say blacks and Hispanics, are not big fans of this Boudin's lurch towards progressivism.
Actually, it's true. I mean, and this is no secret to anyone who studies actual facts like we do. But resoundingly, for example, in East Oakland, 80% or so of the population there would like more police. It's the white saviors living in the Oakland Hills that, mm-hmm. you know, that tell them they don't want police. They're saying, what are you talking about? I want police. So I think, you know, when you look at a case, for example, like Jace Young, you know, in the Bayview, little boy, 6 years old, watching fireworks on July 4th, he was with his family on the porch and got caught in the middle of a gang shooting. And his father's a black man who lives in the Bayview, who has been caught up in himself in the criminal justice system. He came out and spoke for the recall because, you know, Chase Boudin didn't prosecute the kid because he doesn't believe in, quote, kids in cages. And the thing about Chase Boudin is there's no in between for him. Even this kid who shot a 6 year old is going to serve less time than Jace was alive. And so Jace's father came out and said, this guy's got to go. And he's a really interesting man, very eloquent and obviously heartbroken. I think what people see, perhaps, that are a little bit more streetwise and have dealt with violence the way someone like Jace's father has, is that you cannot just blanket say kids don't belong in cages. There are kids that do belong in cages, and they belong in adult jail, not 4 years in juvenile hall for shooting a 6 year old.
I agree with you 100%. It's interesting. I told you earlier that I live in Marin County, which is a affluent county, and I would say very white county. There are Black Lives Matter signs on every other home, but there's no black people here. You understand? No black people.
100%. I was just in Marin because my pitbull had a checkup for leg surgery at the Dr. Sam's clinic. And I absolutely was driving along there just being like, what are all these Black Lives Matter signs? Because if there was a black person walking down the street, they'd be the first ones calling.
You're absolutely right. It's true. It's all about virtue signaling with these people, and it's disgusting, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's virtue signaling from hypocrite hill, as I like to say.
You're right. You said it better than I did. Now, California and San Francisco in particular have been losing lots of residents at a record pace, and some of them just had it and they moved to other affordable places in California. But most of them are moving to Florida and Texas and the Carolinas. And all of those places, I want to point out, are run by conservatives. I personally have many friends, some of which are major employers and some of which are very wealthy. and they just got up and left the state. What happens if this exodus continues? Where is San Francisco headed?
Well, I don't think there's going to be an exodus to the point where housing in San Francisco will be dropping to any affordable price anytime soon. I do know people as well that have moved. Some of them have come back. It's not always what it's cracked up to be when you deal with your first hurricane. I don't think California is in any danger of losing, you know, a huge amount of population. But I think that California has so many issues, and it's not just crime. I mean, we don't have any water, for God's sake. So, I mean, I, again, I'm born and raised here. It's not the same place. You know, my dad was a Reagan Republican. My mom was a Democrat. My mom was Sicilian. My dad was Ukrainian and Irish. They were from the East Coast originally, moved to San Francisco in the 50s. Then when my dad got into San Jose State Teaching School, we moved down to the Silicon Valley. And I grew up in Sunnyvale, such a charming little town, which I loved growing up in because I could do my theater, you know, community theater, come home at midnight, never think twice, right, about anything. But it is not the same. My dad is probably rolling and my mom are probably rolling in their graves to see what's happened. I mean, I don't remember ever seeing, well, put it this way. My Uncle Louis ran a bunch of the hotels in the SROs. And in those days, 70s, 80s, you know, it was kind of like a comic book, right? You go and it'd be the people living in the apartments were the prostitutes. And, you know, he'd say, hey girls, you know, Eddie, that was my dad, we're going to clean, Eddie and me are going to clean the apartment out that's for rent. And why don't you take Susie down and get us, here's a 20, go get us some sandwiches and drinks. Okay, Uncle Louie. And then they would take me to one of, you know, whoever's apartment. We'd watch TV while they braided my hair, right? That's not what the SROs are anymore. They're not like that anymore. Now it's just people that I had a friend who, a great writer, Bruce Bellingham, used to write with Herb Cain. Died of alcohol poisoning. I was trying to get a hold of him for 3 days. He died in an SRO by himself of alcohol poisoning, was there for almost a week. Nobody even noticed except for his friends were like, where's Bruce? But the people running it didn't care. People die in those hotels all the time.
That's really sad. We had hobos and things like that in our day. Now,
exactly.
Right?
My dad did it. My dad jumped trains. Ironically, they call me a clown. But the fact is, I have clowns as godfathers because my whole family on my father's side traveled with Ringling Brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's an absolute truth. That's why when I wrote the story about I Know Why Kate Loved Elephants, that's from personal experience of being backstage, you know, with the animals at Ringling Brothers. My dad was spent a summer as a hobo following the circuit.
Yeah, but those days are long gone. What we have now is hardened criminals walking all over the streets. They're felons, right?
Felons, especially in San Francisco, the amount of people that have felonies that are just out there walking the street would boggle people's minds. I guess when you're a white savior, you know, and you live in the Oakland Hills and like this guy, Brandon Harami, who's one of these, you know, socialists, it's easy for you to talk about what it's like to, you know, we need to let people out and abolish prisons, says Dean Preston, the millionaire that owns, you know, property all over Northern California. But the fact is that you can't abolish prisons because there are just some people that have to be in prison. And California needs to come to that realization that there are some people like Richard Allen Davis that, you know, killed Polly Klaff. Someone said to me, well, prisons don't solve anything and they don't stop crime. And I said, well, they've stopped a lot of little girls from being killed since Richard Allen Davis has been in jail. How many more little girls do you think you would have kidnapped and killed if you were just like, well, there's no prison, so you can go now?
Yeah, well, I remember Polly Klaff, the whole case very well. I go to the park sometimes where right next to where she was abducted. So that's a very sad story. A lot of people in Northern California still remember it. Susan, I just want you to know that I don't think that you're a clown. I think you're a very serious woman. And unfortunately, our time is starting to run short. And I wanted you to please tell our audience where they can read your work and how they can interact with your social media.
So they can find me at Susan D. Reynolds on Twitter. And that's Reynolds like Ryan Reynolds, R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S, at the Marina Times. And then I'm starting a new media company with Stanley Roberts, who is at Stanley Roberts from People Behaving Badly fame on Cron 4 News. And that's called Gotham SF. And we'll be announcing on Twitter and other places when that's up and running. And there'll be opportunities to donate and subscribe and help us fund it to keep a sane voice in the media. That's our goal, is to keep a sane voice in the media, to keep the media honest, to keep the politicians honest, and to be that voice of reason, unapologetic, unbiased. We'll go after everybody. We won't be popular necessarily with the people we're going after, but I think that we're the voice San Francisco needs right now.
So, Susan, that's great. I was wondering if you have any final words for the audience of the AJ Steele Show. And mind you, our audience comes from all over America and the world.
I think my final word would be that, particularly in California, but probably other places as well, is that the very far left is nervous and they're finally finding out that they have a voice out there. And I think they know their days are numbered and they should be, you know, worried.
From your lips to God's ears. Susan, I had a wonderful time talking to you, and I hope that you know that I have a lot of respect for your work and for the fact that you dare stand so bravely against the tide. Thank you so much for coming on the AJ Steele Show. I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll talk again.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really.
The AJ Steele Show, copyrighted 2022.